Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is October 12th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Our theme tonight is Planet Equity. Can tax reform and financial reform replace the missing money? Can equity markets go much higher? And what does the missing money have to do with higher equity markets? Yes, equity markets can go much higher if tax reform and financial reform pass. To a certain extent, you'll be watching the flow of all the money printed by the central banks, hyperinflating into the equity markets and into hard assets. I posted the new financial reform package published by Treasury this week. It's over in the News Trends and Stories. There is a strong commitment to money flowing into crowdfunding, private equity, and public equity. Clearly, Treasury understands many of the increased risks facing U.S. publicly traded companies since Dodd-Frank, sort of the punish the innocent. A lot of that's going on. And the danger of the float in U.S. publicly traded companies shrinking, and it's been shrinking for quite a while, and that shrink is significant. And you've got less new companies coming up that want to do IPOs, et cetera. I would suggest that Treasury should indeed listen to the Howard Root interview we did earlier this year and fix DOJ, stop destroying companies in the pipeline as well. Will the packages be implemented this year? 50-50 at best. I think a lot of the smart money assumes it's going to both tax reform and financial reform will be next year. I'm headed to Washington and New York and Boston later this week. I'll be there between next Monday and the 29th when I'll return. Anyway, I hope to get a better assessment of what the odds are that one or both will pass this year, particularly tax reform. I think the chances are very good by the end of the summer, coming into the 2018 elections, even the fall. But the Republicans are really hard-pressed to get something accomplished this year. And if they get anything accomplished, it will be tax reform. The president now using executive orders and administrative actions to try and repeal Obamacare by the Chinese torture method. Anyway, I think the chances are good that the estate tax will be canceled. So you may want to consider what that might mean to your planning if you're a U.S. citizen and the current minimums don't protect you. What they'll basically do is by ending the estate tax, it'll basically be raising the minimum to an infinite amount, if you will. So if you're a U.S. citizen, you want to plan on that. If you're not a U.S. citizen but are looking to escape the estate tax and moving to the United States is a possibility, expect to see more money shifting in as families feel much safer coming here without an estate tax. You'd be surprised how many people come in above the minimum when you count businesses and farms, particularly a lot of land and a farmland. So I think this could make a difference to certainly a lot of people in the farmland. Rumors now that Trump is rethinking the exclusion of the state and local deduction. He's indicating he didn't realize how many people in his base it would hurt. What does all of this have to do with the missing money? The debt growth model, whether overt or covert, is what it has to do with. There's been a massive shift of money, assets, and technology out of government into corporate and private investor ownership. That was one way or another financed by the debt growth, and I think a lot of the money was pulled out illegally. For example, Enron, when I was studying it, because I believed that they were laundering some of the money coming out of HUD. And that was the reason for the bulge in their revenues that was so hard to explain. In addition, I tell the story in Narco Dollars for Beginners about the publicly traded franchise company that I would pass 25 of their restaurants driving from Tennessee to Philadelphia and back. And with the exception of one of the 25, one clearly had a profitable business. The other 24 clearly weren't covering their overhead from their revenues. So the question is, what business were they in? And I suspect they were in the laundry business. Tomorrow is October 13th. The historical reference for Friday the 13th is the Templars were said to be wiped out by the Vatican and the French king on Friday, October 13th, 1307. And since then, there's been a superstition around Friday the 13th. So tomorrow it is Stanley Fisher resigned as of October 13th. So his resignation goes effective tomorrow. And the IMF World Bank meeting starts tomorrow. It's 13th through 15th in Washington. That's a big do in Washington every year. I used to have dinner at David Maxwell's house, and we'd all put a dollar, as sort of the financial top financial people in Washington, we all put a dollar bet on the long bond, and that was big, big status if you won the long bond bet at David Maxwell's house. Anyway, look for announcements designed to be bullish for the stock market every day. The stock market becomes more important glue that kind of holds the establishment together and promotes their reputation to the world and to each other. I used a quote from Ben Hunt's new article, Sheep Logic, in the financial market section of the third quarter wrap-up web presentation. And let me read it to you because I think it was very well done. Active central bank narrative construction in the service of their policy goals is a permanent change in our market dynamics. The introduction of such a powerful new weapon in the Fed's policy arsenal can no more be removed than mustard gas or tanks could be removed from national arsenals after World War I. Market prices may be mean reverting, but innovation in the service of social control never is. What did the missionaries get out of this? What's our equivalent of wool and mutton? It's low volatility. It's the transformation of capital markets into a political utility, which is just about the greatest gift that status quo political interests can imagine. When Donald Trump and Steve Mnuchin talk about the stock market being their report card, they're just saying out loud what every other administration has known for years. Forget about markets. Our entire political system relies on stocks going up. If stocks don't go up, our public pensions and social insurance programs are busted, driving our current levels of wealth inequality from ridiculously unbalanced to Louis XVI unbalanced. If stocks don't go up, we don't have new collateral for our new debt. And if we can't keep borrowing and borrowing to fuel today's consumption with tomorrow's growth, well, that's no fun now, is it? The flip side to all of this, of course, is that so long as stocks do go up, nothing big is ever going to change. You say you want a revolution, you're a Make America Great guy, and you want someone to drain the swamp. You're a Bernie bro, and you want the rich to pay their fair share. Well, good luck with any of that as long as stocks go up. It's a very stable political equilibrium we have today, full of Sturm und Drang, to provide a bit of amusement and distraction, but very stable for the haves. Very, very important point from Ben Hunt in Sheep Logic. I agree with every word. I want to talk tonight about the patterns of disaster capitalism that we're observing. And it certainly looks and smells like investors want to move significant amounts of money into land, particularly agriculture and farmland in or near North America. And if you've not read our annual wrap-up Global Harvest published in January, I recommend it. The more pressure on the dollar, the more pressure to buy up attractive farmland and continue the U.S. and the Anglo-American alliance role as a food export juggernaut. Remember, it's one of our core competencies. It's one of our chief competitive advantages. I mentioned in the Precious Metals Report 2 weeks ago that the latest land report indicates that the top 100 landowners in America have almost doubled their holdings since 2008. And what that tells me is the smart money wants land and hard assets, not treasury securities. And I doubt they want Bitcoin. Not to say that they're not ensuring the bump of Bitcoin to keep people out of gold and hard assets. From the look of things that have been happening over the last 6 weeks, I think they want to accumulate that land and hard assets fast, and they want it in size, and they're going to keep coming. Money in markets. The U.S. dollar index was headed up towards 94 and is now backed off a tad. It's still holding that 92 line at 92.9. Fixed income is stable. The long treasury has done 6.87%, much better than I thought it would do this year. The intermediate is at 3%, the bond aggregate at 3 1/3, and junk continue to fly at 6.31, a little bit less than the long treasury. Equities, S&P now up 15.5% for a year of very attractive performance. The home builders up almost 20%, really 19.75%. European ETF at 25.54, Germany at 26.5, the international developed minus North America at 21.84%, almost 22%, large caps in China 33%, small caps almost 36%, big performance for the year in the emerging markets trailing a little bit behind at 32.7%. Commodities still struggling, down 4.8%, the commodities index. Gold now up 12.12% as the dollar backs off a little bit. Silver now up 7.6%, again with the dollar backing off a little. And oil still in the doghouse at 16.9%, down 16.9%. We've seen just explosion in innovation in energy technology. We're just reading and hearing something new every day. And clearly, improvements in the efficiency of renewables are making headway. So the big question is breakthrough energy on the horizon? I want to say just a few words about Trump's victory, because this is going to thread through several different stories that I want to discuss tonight. If you look at what happened, there were several factions competing over the presidency, both factions in the deep state. So there's, you know, there's competition and cooperation, but this was a pretty extreme competition with some pretty extreme feelings on either side. So there was real tension to this one. If you look at the losers, basically Clinton and her side of the neocons, and the large Democrats, very much Wall Street and Hollywood, and the tech industry. So it was basically the West Coast and the East Coast. Essentially, the losers, when it was over, instead of putting on their big boy pants, they played dirty poker. They came up with the excuse of the Russia story. They tried to cook it up into something that could really take Trump out. They tried to cook it up into Mueller to take Trump out. You know, Mueller may still be pretty dangerous, but the Russia story is falling apart and sort of going down the drain everywhere you turn. So it just can't seem to stick. And it looks to me across the board like the faction that backed Trump is, you know, these are people who control a lot of invisible weaponry and can act. And they don't have patience for the overt process. So I think you're seeing their fingerprints in many different places, which brings me to the Sonoma fires. We have a situation, a very serious situation in Northern California with wildfires burning out of control with not, it appears, a great intervention to try and stop them. And they're burning in Napa County, Lake County, Sonoma County, Mendocino County, Butte County, and Solano counties. We've got, at this point currently, I think we've got 17 separate wildfires, and it's burnt 200,000 acres, and it's still burning. So at this point, I think we have 3,500 structures, mostly homes, that have been destroyed, and 31 people killed, and more people reported missing. So this is extremely serious and follows on the Panhandle fires, the fires in Montana, in Washington, Oregon, and others around the in the northern part and southern part of California. So very serious. Now, the big question is, are these natural or are they arson? I would give the chances of arson extremely high. And what we're watching is spontaneous fires breaking out in places, despite the reports that appear not to be dry or unduly dry. And in fact, it appears that they're being started probably from the air, whether it's drones or planes or satellites, even lasers done by satellites. It's very, but you're seeing fires spontaneously start in scattered locations in the middle of the night, particularly when it wouldn't be hot and dry. And we're also seeing very understated efforts to try and put them out from everything I can read and tell. So letting things burn with minimal intervention to put out or stop, and the question is why. Now, one thing that I brought up whenever we talk about fires this year is Mark McLandish's presentation at the Mount Shasta Commissioner hearings on global spraying, where Mark talks about what some of the materials in the spraying is that make it harder easier for fires to catch on and harder to stop fires. I posted it back on Solari, but I'm sure if you just do a search for Mount Shasta global spraying in YouTube, you can pick it up. Now, if this is arson, it's a very sophisticated operation. You can't operate over U.S. territory from space or air without U.S. intelligence and military knowing about it and essentially permitting it. So if this is happening, if you look at the powers that be that are permitting it or helping it or financing it or doing it, it's impossible to say. There are far too many questions and far too many unanswered questions to really have an opinion on all of this, but I assure you this kind of arson can't go on unless it's being permitted. Now, unfortunately, it's sort of giving us a similar signal to what we're seeing in Puerto Rico, and if anything, that somebody is looking to acquire enormous amounts of land, including land that is, one, very attractive for rich people, and two, very attractive for farmland. So if anything, my question is big money looking to move out of fixed income and get into hard assets quickly and in size? Certainly tax reform and financial reform will move a lot of money back into the U.S., a lot of family wealth into the U.S., and land in prime areas like those in California are going to be a choice and the demand is going to skyrocket. So you've got wine country, you've got prime areas for California legalized marijuana farms, lots of reports of marijuana farms in Mendocino and Napa being destroyed. And because of the nature of their crop, they can't get crop insurance. So a lot of legalized marijuana farms could be wiped out. And that's a very interesting situation. So I wanted to look at some of the patterns you look for in these kinds of situations. If something is arson, then it's being done for multiple reasons. So I thought we could go through some of them. What we're looking for over time is patterns. And what I find is in a situation where you have a disaster that could be either induced or could be natural, that you want to follow the money and the changes and see what patterns emerge. And from that, you can learn a lot over time about what really happened. Okay, so let's look at some of the possibilities in these kinds of situations where they are induced or where people are positioned to take advantage of natural disasters. Can be one or the other. First of all, somebody wants access to land at low cost. We've been seeing that happen for more than a decade all over the country, and lots of sort of disaster capitalism situations, not to mention the dump of the housing market is a way to pick up lots of land. I always like to look at what's contiguous to what's now may become available, so because you may have an accumulator nearby. First of all, the question I would ask, in the areas that are burning, what percentage of the political contributions in those areas were Democratic? What percentage voted for Bernie as opposed to one of the establishment characters. I suspect the numbers are pretty high. So what difference will what is happening now make to political efforts for 2018, for 2020 elections, as well as the push for secession in California? I think it would be very interesting to do a political analysis of what's happening in those counties and the pro forma of what it's going to do to the big political issues going forward. Another issue, again, looking at the land, is the marijuana farms in Mendocino and Napa. They're very, a lot of politics around the legalization issue and who's going to control it. So I think it's very interesting that we're seeing a significant capacity in California marijuana potentially affected. It's very important when you look at land. Remember in the Bible, when factions fight, what do? When you're fighting with another faction, you kill the other faction and you take their land. Just remember, the same things happen now. It just gets more subtle. The second thing is, whenever you have a natural disaster, a quote-unquote natural disaster, there are accelerated things that can happen, particularly if it's declared a national disaster, national emergency, and suddenly a different set of rules kick in on the mortgage insurance operations in the U.S. government, the mortgage operations, and you can do all sorts of things. And it's a great excuse to clean up mortgage fraud and play all sorts of financial shenanigans with the federal accounts. So it's one of the reasons I always tell people it's dangerous to live in places that have a lot of mortgage fraud, because they tend to have arson and fires and things tend to blow up and burn up. Now, whether Santa Rosa and some of these areas had heavy incidents of mortgage fraud, I don't know. But it's one of the things I would look for. And again, even if they didn't, it's going to be an opportunity for the mortgage world to play games. A third is burn down redwood forests. If you want to do big developments and there's no way the activists and the neighbors going to let you tear down the redwood forests, of course, having a forest fire will do it for you. So normally, no developer is ever allowed to touch those forests. But if wildfires burn them down, it's a different story. Sometimes you'll see fires happen to disturb or destroy historical archives and fields, or allow them to be historical archives or assets to be moved. So big allegations about gold being moved out during 9/11. So you want to keep an eye on exactly what is being destroyed, both, you know, physically, but also in terms of what I call the morphogenic field. Then another reason or another thing you see is moving out undesirable populations. So if you want to get rid of a certain element, one of my questions in Houston is, are they trying to re-engineer certain groups out of Houston, particularly the groups that population that came over after Katrina? Another is implement new systems. We saw a great video from TrueSteam about how the Las Vegas incident was going to inspire new security systems in the hotels and big business for the security system folks. Sometimes you see that, including talking municipalities into getting new systems. A big one, if this is induced, is to set an example that you can use to blackmail other public officials. You basically do what we say or we'll do it to you. And so look what happened to Santa Rosa. Do you want that to happen to you? If you don't want that to happen to you, you want to behave and do A, B, C, D that we're asking you to do. And if you're the mayor, what are you going to do? You can't. It's very difficult to turn around and tell people that you're being blackmailed in that way. Then access to natural resources. One person said to me, you know, if you look at where the fires are in the Sierra Mountains, I'm wondering if it's going to make them easier to go look for gold. But obviously burning a pathway in to get natural resources or making it easier to do something with that land again that activists or laws or rules might not let you to do if the full forest was there. Obviously, sometimes in these kinds of situations, there's an insurance angle or fraud. You always want to kind of understand how the insurance money works on something like this. And then finally, you'll see these kinds of situations where it's a cover story to take someone or something out. And you're really just looking to get one company, but you're happy to burn 100 to get that one, sad to say. Anyway, so those are sort of some of the patterns that you'll see in these kinds of situations. Again, I don't know what's happening, but I think the incident or the percentage chance of arson is very significant. I was reminded going through this of the quote from Corinthians, "When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child, but when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know, even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, charity, these three, but the greatest of these is charity." So we live with the uncertainty, and we watch for patterns to emerge through a glass darkly. And please remember to keep our big boy pants on. I'm sending prayers to everyone in California. Just please be safe. Las Vegas, speaking about disasters. I keep getting lots of questions on Las Vegas, and I keep saying I don't know what happened. I could spend a great deal of time trying to figure out what happened. I still probably wouldn't know what happened. The information will emerge. I do have reports from people who know people who were wounded, so it looks like this is for real. A couple of intuitions which I think are important. One is, I believe what you're seeing in Las Vegas is an example of 2.0 to 3.0. If you look at the people getting hurt, Adelson, Wynn, MGM, very 2.0. The second thing is, there's some kind of mini-night thing going on. When I say mini-night thing, for the new subscribers, I'm referring to a story from Judges in the Bible where Gideon is asked by an angel to throw the Midianites out of Israel, the Midianites being hateful, suspicious people. And Gideon comes down the side of the mountain without weapons. He and his army of 300 come down the side of the mountain with lanterns and pitchers, so noise and vibration. The Midianites are so hateful and distrustful of each other that they jump up in the dark and kill each other. And the defining characteristic of what happened in Las Vegas was extreme sloppiness. If you look at the people who do things like false flags, this is unbelievably sloppy. And you just look at it and you say, something went wrong here. I don't know if we're looking at a false flag or a mob war. But the Midianite thing, there's absolutely factionalism represented here. Now, Las Vegas, if you want to understand Las Vegas, read Sally Denton's book on Las Vegas. It's a doozy. And in my opinion, if you read it, you'll understand why I say this. Las Vegas has always been, first and foremost, a laundry for Area 51 and the black budget folks. Now, I think the pressure on the black budget folks to continue to increase funding, particularly as inflation really grows, is intense. In the meantime, margins, whether it's in the casino business or any of the entertainment businesses in Las Vegas, is shrinking. Folks are getting squeezed. I would note, right next to the operation, there was a Roman Catholic shrine, so I have to ask, is there any sign of the Vatican involvement? Another question revolves around stock patterns. Soros's fund downsized their Adelson position, downsized, sold completely their Wynn Resorts position, and then put a big short on MGM sometime between, it appears, June and August. And I would say that's not a reason. You know, Soros's profits on MGM's troubles, MGM owning Mandalay Bay, are not a reason for the operation, but they're certainly a symptom that there was something expected. Again, margins are shrinking. The black budget guys need the money. All these folks, Wynn, Adelson, MGM, they're all middlemen. Has someone decided they're too expensive? Now, I'll tell you why I ask that reason. It just smells like shrinking margins and reengineering from 2.0 to 3.0. It reminds me of the stories in late 70s, early 80s, when U.S. intelligence and enforcement squeezed out the mob. Essentially, organized crime got much more professional. It could be run through government agencies, or the money could be laundered through government agencies and leveraged in the stock market by publicly traded companies. And so the economics of doing it that way was compelling as the stock market and PEs rose, and it made economic sense to squeeze out the intelligence enforcement could just squeeze out the mob. It's really funny. It was in the 80s when John Gotti's son, while he was on trial, said, you know, did we deal drugs? Don't be ridiculous. Who can compete with the government? Anyway, one of the problems is when you get that community feeling irritated, to a certain extent, they feel that anybody making profits in the private sector, particularly someone like the casino guys, are essentially making it thanks to many of their good works or the use of their credit or government regulations or a variety of things done by government to accommodate them. And at some point, they look at many businesses as proprietaries. In other words, they created it. If you want to understand a good example of that, go take a look at Margin Call. Because what you realize by the end, the bank is a big utility using government credit. And like many of these other businesses, it's the equivalent of what do they call a proprietary. And so you wonder, is the same thing that happened in the 70s, 80s now happening with the casino guys? And is this part of being squeezed out by more artificial intelligence, more automation, and by the next generational model from 2.0 to 3.0. So hold that thought. Let me turn to Houston, an article in Bloomberg that I posted on the website today about speculation in the real estate and the sort of little speculators who are picking it up and aggregating it and how that relates to Wall Street and a variety of other players. And a real signal from Houston. Then let me just quickly mention Puerto Rico, which is turning into a very ugly picture. It's clear that the debt holders who were negotiating with Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico was negotiating with them and the federal government to process itself through a bankruptcy, you could see that all the players had just gotten very frustrated with Puerto Rico. And I wonder if that there's a relationship between that and the fact that now Puerto Rico has been absolutely wiped out. So, question mark, is this the disaster capitalism jump the curve plan that helps blow through the process? It sure looks like that what is happening. And my question is, will the big agricultural players one way or another pick up lots and lots of land? Because Puerto Rico is a very, very attractive location for much agriculture, given its position vis-a-vis the United States and its position vis-a-vis export. Which brings me to Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein was the former Miramax founder executive, now with his brother Bob partners in running Weinstein & Company until he was fired a couple days ago. He's now being investigated. This is Harvey Weinstein pylon. He's now being investigated by the FBI, the New York PD, Scotland Yard, and he's got over 30 actresses and growing alleging rape and sexual harassment of various kinds. I've never seen a more explosive smear campaign of allegations. And based on what we know about Harvey Weinstein, are probably meritorious. Anyway, but this is one of the reasons I wanted to bring up the Trump victory, because when Clinton lost, Harvey Weinstein, who was infamous for sexual harassment of many different kinds, Weinstein lost the air cover that he got from Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton. It's very interesting. So Harvey's providing them financial air cover of many kinds. He's a major Democratic donor. So the coverage went two ways. Now, what does this suggest? Has everybody discovered morality when it comes to sexual harassment? Hardly. It reflects two things. One is that the power of Hollywood entertainment is shifting out of Hollywood entertainment to Silicon Valley, to the tech guys and social media. So the air is going out of their balloon 2.0. And the Clintons lost. The air is going out of their balloon 2.0 and politically shifting into the, you know, whatever will emerge as 3.0 on the political side. So the Clintons can't protect Weinstein. The Weinsteins can't protect Clinton. And you're sort of seeing a spiral down. Now, why is this important? Again, the large Democratic donors like the Weinsteins could have put on their big boy pants and say, okay, we need to change. We need to reorganize to win in 2018 and 2020. In the meantime, Americans clearly want majority poll to sit down and make America great again. So we'll make peace with the winners and we'll get back to work. We're doing the work the country pays us to do, and we'll do everything we can to win 2018 and 2020. They didn't do that. And instead, as I said, they decided to play dirty poker. They played the Russia card for all it was worth and more. It failed completely. They've burned up a lot of time and money and caused a lot of problems. Now Clinton's playing victim and she's on a whining tour. It's funny, lots of rumors saying that she's moved next door and she and Bill are not speaking. Bill told her the book was terrible and not to play victim and not to do a whining tour. He's absolutely right. You know, what's funny is if she just listened to him, she would have probably won the election. So I'm glad she didn't. But anyway, so if you, they not only lost the election, but they blew the post-election shot that they had, because if you're going to play a card to take Trump out and play dirty, then you've got to succeed it. If you're going to shoot the bear, you better kill the bear. But they shot and missed, just like they lost the election. And they've wasted enormous amounts of time and money and really harmed the country. If there's ever proof that Clinton was not capable of being president of the United States, there you have it. I suspect that now what we're beginning to see unfold in a variety of situations wouldn't surprise me if it's in the mix in California and if it's in the mix in Las Vegas, even though Adelson and Wynn are on the Republican side. It wouldn't surprise me if we're seeing a bit of hardball back threaded throughout many of these situations. Now, remember, when you get hardball back, the faction of the deep state that would be involved doesn't say, how do we get them back? The question is, how do we make money getting them back? Because then we can get them back. So watch the cash flows, and that's why I always look for the patterns here. So why Harvey? Well, first of all, Harvey's low-hanging fruit because the sexual harassment charges were in the can. The Times had a complete package written story in 2004. They had another one here. So this one is easy, and but I suspect money's involved. Again, we've got shrinking margins in the entertainment business, power shifting to Amazon. Interestingly, you know, whose studio head just got taken out or put on suspension because of his association with Weinstein and his involvement with apparently one of the actresses claims to have reported her allegations to him. But the power shifting to Amazon, Facebook, Google, social media, away from movies 2.0. So part of it is that. My big question is, are dirty flows involved at the Weinstein Company that we don't know about? I mean, clearly, Brother Bob is still in charge. Interestingly enough, since the Clinton administration, several times I've been spiked by the either the Clintons or the Weinstein Company, and I always thought it came through the Weinstein Company. Weinstein Company produces Michael Moore, who, as far as I can see, is on a very tight leash. And one time he had asked me to come up and film with him for several days and brief him, and it was a big production. And I told one of the people who was organizing the trip that they would cancel at the last minute, because it always happens. And I can't tell you how many times I've been canceled out at the last time, a minute. You know, somebody makes the call, and knowing that he was produced by Weinstein, I knew it was a matter of, I bet very high odds that it'd be spiked. And sure enough, right before it was spiked, no reason given, never called again. And I said, there goes the Weinstein Company. In my opinion, it was a terrible mistake to play the Russia card. If I were in their shoes, I would have played the big boy pants card. But they didn't, so now a whole bunch of people are going to get cleaned out. And I think Weinstein, I think this is only the beginning for Weinstein. And two, I think this is going to spread. I think a lot of players are going to get cleaned out. Whether you look across the board on Puerto Rico and the islands, on Houston, on California, it looks to me like the shift from 2.0 to 3.0 is accelerating. Speaking of which, that brings us to Bitcoin. I promised you that I would do a special Solari report on Bitcoin. It's called Bitcoin the Op. It's really about blockchain technology and cryptocurrencies, which I think there's a reasonably good chance they're going to try and blow this into the mother of all bubbles. So if you look at the technology they used in the 80s to do the housing bubble, you add derivatives to do the housing bubble in the 90s, and the 2000s, you add the games you played on the tech bubble, you roll all that technology and add the global smartphones with entrainment technology, you've really got the basis of something amazing. Anyway, I wrote a commentary, and then Harry and I recorded the audio. Next week, I've arranged for a law firm in Northern California, who luckily is far away from the fires, to write a report on the tax treatment on Bitcoin. What I've heard and seen, both among our subscribers and readers, as well as the attendees at the Nexus conference, that there is a serious lack of knowledge of what a Bitcoin trader or speculative investor needs to do to make sure they're compliant with IRS taxes. And I think it's very important that you understand what the rules and regulations. My guess is if you look at most people owning and trading Bitcoin, a significant number of them are out of compliance with the laws and rules, which means, you know, when the U.S. government decides to enforce, it could be significant. The second thing is, I wanted to mention Harry sent me a note saying that the Treasury is supposed to be responsible for coining money, not the Federal Reserve and not a Bitcoin miner. So in one sense, cryptocurrencies are a fundamental violation of the Constitution. Until governments become the miners, I guess. Can blockchain keep governments honest through transparency? If it can, it will not be used for that purpose. Anyway, but he wanted me to mention it, and I wrote him back and said, I'm confident that this is one of the reasons the IRS determined that Bitcoin was a property. So the IRS determination is Bitcoin is property, not currency, for purposes of tax treatment. Make time to, if you're interested in trading Bitcoin, I think you, or any of the cryptocurrencies, I think that's a very important report for you to read. So we'll have that published early next week. Just note that the chipping away in the dollar market continues. China launches yuan, a ruble payment system. That's not disconnected to why the tax reform is hoping to attract in and bring so much corporate money back in the tax reform. That'll be very strong for the dollar. But it'll also, you know, help rebuild Fortress America. And it wouldn't surprise me if that both of those are connected to why somebody might want to create massive farmland holdings in the United States, because food exports are going to be one of the ways that we earn hard currency on the merit in the global system. So very strong for the dollar as well. We posted this week my interview with that wonderful Chuck Marone of Strong Towns. It's called Aligning Profit Motives and Community Needs. It's posted. We also posted over in the News Trends and Stories my interview with Stacey Herbert at the Nexus Conference in Aspen. It's posted with the Kaiser Report. And then I republished a book review I published earlier this year called Follow the Money, A Citizen's Guide to local Government. As more and more people in our subscriber and reader base contemplate enforcing the Constitution, yes, I'm getting a lot of questions. I need to learn how the money works in my state and local government. Yes. So one of the best books I found, we have a Salary Report called Unpacking Your Local Financial Ecosystem. But the American Institute for Economic Research up in Massachusetts has an excellent book, Follow the Money, A Citizen's Guide to Local Government, and I recommend it to you. It'll help you. I would read that first and then listen to Unpacking Your Financial Ecosystem. And then dive in and just start reading and learning the finances for your state and local government. And then finally, A New Food for the Soul. It's called Pacific Standard Time, LA. Fabulous exhibit out in the Los Angeles area. And if you are in that area, you'd absolutely want to read it and check it out. It sounds wonderful. Our hero this week, we have two. One is Norm Finkelstein, who, wonderful scholar and professor in New York, who's been a real champion of bringing transparency to what is going on in Palestine and doing his very best to protect the Palestinian people. He's a real sort of hero and purveyor of the truth. He was arrested on Saturday, dragged out of his apartment in the middle of the night. Claims to have been beaten. If Norm Finkelstein says it, I believe it. And is now facing a ridiculous prosecution. You can read all about it at his website. But I'd just like to ask prayers and say put in a plug for Norman Finkelstein. The second hero is Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State. We have watched over the last 2 weeks an absolute tsunami attack on Tillerson, basically trying to get him resign, to destroy his relationship with Trump, something Trump is, it's a trap Trump has fallen into, which is too bad. And there is nothing harder than being in an important position in Washington and having to deal with the tsunami of just character assassination. It's horrible. Tillerson has, from what I can tell, put together an effective relationship with Kelly and Mattis. So you have the chief of staff, the secretary of defense, and the secretary of state basically representing a group of three very experienced, capable people. And that makes a powerful team. Now, Kelly's experienced in the way of Washington, so is Mattis. Tillerson is playing entry-level position at the Secretary of State. That's very hard to do. But somebody wants to break up that team and put in their own player at state. Now, let me tell you who the suspects are here. My number one suspect, interestingly enough, is Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, so she knows state. She knows a lot of the people there. She hired a bunch of the people there. And she has the advantage that many, many people are getting laid off or anticipate being laid off, because when Tillerson walked in, the White House handed him a plan to dramatically downsize state. It wasn't his plan. It wasn't his idea. But he's getting tarred with it. Now, one of the examples, The Economist had one of the cheapest articles I've ever seen for The Economist, their editor being one of the Rothschilds who's a buddy of Clinton's. What they said was pretty shocking if you know the facts. They're blaming Tillerson for things that are not under his control. They're either under White House's control, or they're under the FBI's control, or they're under the Matrix, you know, the U.S. federal Matrix control. And Tillerson is struggling in the double binds, trying to get things done when he doesn't have control, and now he's being punished for things that are out of his control. The Economist knows better. It's the kind of thing you would expect an author or journalist who didn't know what the system looked like. But clearly they're taking very cheap shots. It's almost sort of like, let's get Rex. And it very much reads as though Clinton is, and her little group is pushing behind it. My second suspect are the neocons. They love to break up the Tillerson-Kelly Mattis dance and get one of their own people in there. And so, you know, between the Clintons and the neocons, it's an ugly dance. Now, right in the middle of this, we had Richard Haass, the head of the Council of Foreign Relations, tweeting out that Tillerson ought to be fired. And you think, what in the world has the world come to when the executive director of the CFR is tweeting attacks on the Secretary of State and calling for their resignation? I mean, this is a pretty out of control situation. I would say the Midianite thing is going strong. Anyway, it reminds me of the expression in the Bush administration when the head of public affairs said, you know, this is like being in a rubber lifeboat in the middle of the ocean and everybody's going at each other with razor blades. If you look at our news videos in the web presentation, we have under news trends and stories, we have a page of sort of top picks on videos. There's a 1-hour briefing on Tillerson, by Tillerson, on where things are at state. It's one of the most impressive briefings I've ever seen. Trump, unfortunately, is used to running a small family business. He's got an ego and temperament that's not suited to, you know, living with the double binds and the unfairness of the matrix structure. And he's challenged dealing with the complexity, and he's failing at building a team. He just is not someone who has the managerial skills to build a team other than his own kids. So we've got, you know, Clinton on one side and a whole bunch of people shooting at Tillerson. So Clinton and the neocons on one side and Trump misbehaving on the other side in a dangerous world where U.S. power is slipping. So Tillerson is in a very hard position. Now, I happen to be delighted that I'm not part of this or any administration, nor will I ever be one. But at the same time, I have to tell you that I'm glad that people of his quality are willing to do the job. So it's doubly hard when you're doing a cabinet position as an entry-level position, let alone working for a president who's doing the presidency as an entry-level position. In an adult world, everybody would put on their big boy pants and help them. But instead, the competition has never ended since the end of the election, and everybody thinks it's fun to, you know, take shots at everybody else on the Titanic, and they don't seem to understand that the Titanic is running into an iceberg and it needs to be turned, and maybe that's more important than shooting at each other. Let's go to the movies. I wanted to review Ken Burns' 12-hour, 6-part series, The National Parks, America's Best Idea. I bought the package and it's come late, so I haven't finished it. But I will. It's pretty significant, but I love Ken Burns' stuff. I love his brother's stuff. They just put together documentaries with unbelievable and great footage. But I wanted to bring the national parks to your attention because every time I hear someone talking about how groovy it would be to implode the U.S. government or how groovy it would be to do privatization, the first thing I appreciate is that when you've got a lot of predators running around who are trying to acquire land, whether it's in Puerto Rico or California or all the other places we've had fires, Montana, Washington, Oregon. When you've got predators roaming around, the last thing you want to do is open the door to any kind of change of ownership or acquisition of the government's holdings of land. So I wanted to focus you on that. There's been a great deal of discussion about Agenda 21, now 30, and different sort of movements of land into the federal government during the Obama administration. But if you look at the monkey business related to U.S. finances and accounting and the efforts to sabotage the U.S. Constitution, it's not going to be long before suddenly that land could start to be in play. So one of the reasons to really understand the importance of enforcing the Constitution, we don't want to implode the U.S. government. We want to assert authority over the U.S. government, and we want to make sure that land is protected and is simply not auctioned off to the people at pennies on the dollar that will be buying it with the money that they stole from you and me. Our interview this week, we're starting our third quarter wrap-up, and this is going to be a very special wrap-up because I'm finally going to take on the whole control system and lay it out for you. I wanted to really have a very juicy conversation with Joseph about the news trends and stories. I look forward very much every quarter to going through them. We spend our news trends and stories editor, Brad Edens, does an incredible job going through and aggregating all the stories we picked out during the month and then taking a look, pruning them, checking our trends, and really bringing them to you in a format where you can very quickly understand everything that's happened of any import in the third quarter and really see the deeper trends in the news, sort of help you clear away the noise. If you go to the web presentation, which you can link to from your subscriber links in the commentary for the third quarter wrap-up, News Trends and Stories Part 1, you'll see all of our stories laid out with a little introduction by me about what's going on, what's important. But there was so much. It was very explosive this quarter. When I got over to see Joseph, I drove over for the weekend, and we sat down and we said, look, let's not go through all the trends and stories. Let's just step back and talk about what's really important, starting with enforcing the Constitution. If you watch the little video we put up on the commentary, it's an extra long one this week. It's about 9 or 10 minutes, and it's a part of our conversation about why it's so important to enforce the Constitution. One subscriber, wonderful subscriber, wrote me this week after listening and said, oh, I have to listen to this a couple times. You guys are going so fast and you're skipping up and using so many concepts, which, you know, I haven't had a chance to understand. So I said, well, you know, there's so much in the archives that are building blocks to this conversation. We discussed the rape of Russia, which is what happened in Russia when the U.S. intelligence agencies and the big law firms and investment banks and the Harvard Endowment went in and basically just raped the place. And we did two interviews with Anne Williamson, wonderful reporter who had been reporting in Russia for the Wall Street Journal. And there are two Anne Williamson interviews in the archives that are great descriptions of the rape of Russia. But that was one example. Another example was 5G with Jason Bodden-Smith, or how to enforce the Constitution with Cynthia McKinney, or why you don't want a constitutional convention with Edwin Vieira. So anyway, I've asked her to make up a list of all the different building blocks that are in the archives that could help you understand the very sort of high-speed, compressed conversation that Joseph and I had. Anyway, this subscriber was very delightful and funny. And again, you want to see the complete list of news trends and stories. One of the things I mentioned was I used a quote from David Russell Schilling, referring to Buckminster Fuller, that talks about why the news seems so overwhelming. And it relates to what happens when you have information technology really exploding the knowledge curve. Okay, so let me read it to you. Buckminster Fuller created the knowledge doubling curve. He noticed that until 1900, human knowledge doubled approximately every century. By the end of World War II, knowledge was doubling every 25 years. Today, things are not as simple as different types of knowledge have different rates of growth. For example, nanotechnology knowledge is doubling every 2 years, and clinical knowledge every 18 months. But on average, human knowledge is doubling every 13 months. According to IBM, the build-out of the Internet of Things will lead to the doubling of knowledge every 12 hours. Okay, imagine that. So our great-grandparents, it was doubling every century, and we're going into a world that's going to double every 12 hours. Okay, so if things seem overwhelming, you can't approach information and knowledge in a world where it's doubling every century the way you do when it's doubling every 12 hours. Anyway, I put a write-up up on the web presentation after the quote that explains why I believe that one of the things that's happening is the rate of entropy is increasing. Some things are failing and some things are rising. We're getting a divergence. Some going to the light, some going to the dark. Anyway, but again, check out news trends and stories on the web presentation. I also, during the interview, discussed with Joseph his new book, and I put up a book review this week called Hess and the Penguins. It's the story about Rudolf Hess and what Joseph calls the Hess mess, which is what in the world happened to Hess. Hess parachuted into Scotland several years before the war ended, trying to broker a peace deal, in fact, that would have given the Jewish community in Germany and the Nazi areas the ability to move to Palestine and the creation of Israel. And the deal did not get consummated for a variety of reasons, which are part of all the unanswered questions in the Hess mess. Anyway, it's a fascinating book and one in a series that Joseph has done on the Nazis and where the Nazi fortune and Nazi personnel went at the end of World War II, including being rolled into the U.S. national security state. So, fascinating book. Hess and the Penguins. Check out the book review on the website. So, fascinating interview with Joseph. This is part one, and part two will be up next week. We also touch base on the virtual pipe organ crowdfund. Joseph is on pins and needles waiting for his pipe organ, and at this point, we expect it towards the end of the year. It's in process, but remember, it's being custom made, so it's complicated. The build takes a long time. Ask Catherine. Hello, Catherine. Many commentators say there is no motive for the Vegas attack. Does the attached article qualify as a possible motive? And then the article is to stock sales. There are two stock sale patterns. MGM, the CEO, and some of the execs sold a significant amount of stock in September. And then we had positions taken by the Soros funds, including a big short on MGM. So what you're looking at is not a motive, but it's definitely a symptom. Remember, you never ask how to accomplish a goal. You ask how can you make money accomplishing the goal. And so I think whatever happened related to accomplishing the goal, but different players wanted to make sure that on the squeeze on MGM and the casino industry going from 2.0 to 3.0, they were betting against the 2.0 guys. Hello, Catherine. Saw you make reference to Unrig and that you're not involved because of disagreements with Steele. A few days before that comment, I had signed up to volunteer for one of Cynthia McKinney's power cells via communication with Steele. I respect your opinion and poise with the difficult issues we face in taking back the reins from Mr. Global, and of wondering if maybe I should reconsider spending time and energy organizing with the Unrig movement. Do you have any insight on this you'd be willing to share? Thank you for sticking your neck out and for all you do as a human in these transformative times. I'm a great fan of Cynthia McKinney, and I think she's working with Steele because Steele offered to do a lot of work to help her get to the United States and organize things for on the ground. I tried to negotiate agreement with Steele on both what I needed in terms of financial integrity as well as different policy positions that would allow me to publicly support. I could not achieve an agreement. And so now I think if you can help Cynthia and do it directly, in whatever way you decide to do that, you can certainly communicate directly with her through her website. I think working as a volunteer to support her and whatever she's up to is a great idea. I think it's extremely important. One of the problems is I am very conservative about how money is brought into any effort, how it's recorded, how it's made transparent to everybody involved. And I'm extremely conservative, having been through several efforts to falsely frame me using money and money transactions. So I've seen a lot of financial fraud. I've watched a lot of people be framed. I've watched, you know, I've lived through my trying to be framed on several occasions. And so what I would say is, if you are helping Cynthia, I would make sure you're dealing directly with Cynthia. And whatever you do, you don't take any money that's coming in through through Steele's operation. I'm not saying that he's intentionally doing anything, but he is pulling in money from Bitcoin. And my concern is, if money comes in anonymously through Bitcoin and every donor is not identified and disclosed, I mean, you can literally have somebody say, oh, well, you know, they were laundered money through the Muslim Brotherhood, and the next thing you know, you've got a frame job and you're off and running. So as long as you don't take any money and you deal with Cynthia directly, I think that will take care of any concerns I might have. And again, I'm not saying Steele is doing anything inappropriate, but I believe in extra precautions in this environment, which, if you haven't had my personal experience or training, I can seem ridiculously difficult on that point to people who have never been through the ringer. Hello, Catherine. My husband reads Hal Turner's website. He came across the following: is this fear porn or can it be true? October 4th, JPMorgan Chase submitted new emergency bylaws to the U.S. Security Exchange Committee dealing with how the board of directors can operate after a nuclear attack upon the United States. This is a very bad development. There are numerous reports, so I believe it's true. However, it's what I would do if I was a director, and I'm surprised they did not already have something like this in place. So to me, it's a good sign that they did. Given their role as basically the financial payment infrastructure globally with many different governments and around the world, it's just prudent. So even if you think the plan is 1% of 1%, you want to do it. You want to have a plan in place and be able to deal with any contingencies. It may even be regulators who are requiring it. Now, the danger on something like this is you want to make sure it can't be misused, so that in certain circumstances you engineer something that the boards would never approve if everybody was there and present. So, but on the face of it, I don't see anything that I would consider inappropriate. Again, all these different organizations have to plan and prepare for the worst case. It's part of what makes you powerful in this kind of environment. If you look at the planning and the work that we did to have and maintain a disaster recovery kit, you would think, I'm really expecting a disaster. Now, I know one can happen, but I think the chances of me ever having to use that disaster recovery kit in the next year are extremely small. At the same time, I'm glad I have it. Catherine, your comments during your Kaiser Report interview were awesome to behold. Thank you for continually taking personal risk for the benefit of your fellow humans. Your courage is inspiring. Wow, thank you. That was very nice of you to say. Stacey Herbert and I finally got to meet in person in Aspen, and we had a chat on camera, and they ran it today as part of the Kaiser Report. It's posted in News Trends and Stories, so check it out. I was just curious why you chose Solaria for your company name. This is a very embarrassing story. I found a reference to it on the internet that it was from ancient Greece. It was from the ancient Greek. It meant to reduce anxiety through illumination. And then I could never find it again after I named the company. Actually, I named the company that I was doing Hamilton Securities, and then I named the investment advisory subsidiary Solaria. Anyway, I've been meaning for a long time to find an ancient Greek and early language scholar to research. So if you're an ancient Greek and early language scholar and you're interested on a temporary gig to research that for us, please let us know at customerservice@solaria.com. Anyway, I got a good laugh a couple years later when somebody reminded me that Soleri was the intergalactic currency in the sci-fi book Dune. But interestingly enough, that's what a sound currency does. It reduces anxiety through illumination by helping everybody understand what the honest price is, and i.e. what relative value is all across the human spectrum. They can communicate intelligently, and it's one of the reasons having an unsound currency is so irritating. You don't have to read the following in air, but I just wanted to tell you how much the Soleri Report has changed my life and my family's life for the better. You're truly a remarkable person. I appreciate what you do. I'm inspired now to do more to make the world a better place. Thanks for giving me the roadmap. Oh, good. Thank you. That's what we're here to do. So we love hearing that it's working. Hi, Catherine. Thanks always for your work. Your suggestions as to how we each contribute to retaining our freedoms in this country are invaluable and remind me how each of us needs to take personal responsibility to do whatever we can according to our abilities. Question, you mentioned last week that you were doing a presentation on the disturbing elements of the Nexus Conference along with Harry Blaser. I did listen to your excellent interview with Rachel McIntosh, but I'm looking forward to further info from you and Harry. Do you still intend to present it? Yes, it's posted today. Check out Bitcoin, the app. And also, if you're speculating in cryptocurrencies, please remember special Soleri report on tax issues for U.S. citizens will post next week. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that's it for the week. A lot to cover, a lot of disasters going on. Next week, October, News, Trends, and Stories with Dr. Joseph Farrell, Part 2. We'll be covering culture, science, and technology, the unanswered questions, inspiration, a lot of great discussion with Joseph. Culture is his great love, and he loves to talk about that. This week was geopolitics and economy and financial markets. I'll be doing money and markets from New York City. So I'll be up in New York City and looking forward to a great time. The following week, the third quarter wrap-up, equity overview, and Rambus blockbuster chartology. I can't wait to see the blockbuster chartology this quarter. We've got a lot to talk about because the markets are in a very interesting position. There'll be no money in markets. It's being the last week of the month. And I will be at the Metropolitan Opera twice that week to see Tales of Hoffman and La Boheme, so I'm in heaven because you know me and opera. And then November 2nd, I'll be back in Hickory Valley, and we'll do the theme for the third quarter wrap-up. That's the fourth piece, Control 101. And I would say, as Joseph would say, it's a whopper doozy topic. I'm planning on laying out the whole control issue, and it's absolutely important. I'd wanted to do Go Local, but it was always breaking. It wasn't working because people didn't have that understanding of control. We need to talk about how we take back control locally. Anyway, that's it. That's what's coming up. Please remember, don't worry about whether or not there's a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.